This is How's It China with Cliff Central and China Plus. Download the podcast on the Cliff Central website, app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Every week, for those people who don't already know, we are busy with How's It China, and today we get to episode 4 of a series which I think is becoming increasingly popular. We're finding that lots and lots of people are suddenly very interested and curious about China. They're interested in South Africans who are living in China. They're interested in Chinese people in South Africa. I found out some interesting things yesterday. There are over 300,000 Chinese living in South Africa, and over 200,000 of them are in Johannesburg. Did you know that, Pumi?
Don't you remember Mr. Walter Pond told us all about this?
That's right. But I found this out from the Chinese Consul General yesterday. Well, that's interesting.
But living in Joburg is the place to be.
Clearly.
It's the place to be.
Well, I'll tell you what. Some young South Africans are leaving South Africa to go and live in China. Some are moving to teach English in parts of China, and some are furthering their studies in China's renowned universities. In today's episode of How's It China, we'll be speaking to South Africans who live and have lived in China, and we'll be talking about their experiences there. So, I want to welcome to the studio a couple of guests. First of all, Boitabi Somokwena is going to join us on Skype, and we're going to talk to Asi and to Tsepiso, who are in the studio with us as well. Very nice to see you guys, and we'll welcome Boitabi So in a second on the line. Nice to have you guys here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank
sure.
you very much.
What an absolute pleasure. It's great to have you here. Boitabi, so are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi there.
Ah, fantastic.
Good
we have a
morning.
Full complement. Well, we've got a lot to talk. We've got a lot to talk to you guys about this morning. So let me just introduce all of our guests properly. Tsepiso Malele is a chartered marketer. He's been working for Brand South Africa for over 4 years as a marketing manager, and he was Brand South Africa's country head in China in 2017. And that's when he lived there. Asi Lili, who's here, she's from the Eastern Cape. She studied at the University of the Free State and moved to China to pursue an MBA at Peking University, lived in Beijing for some time. Asi, it's very nice to see you.
Thank you, guys.
You also had a YouTube channel and still have the YouTube channel, Asi in Asia, where you share all your adventures in and around China. And she was in the Chinese media industry.
That's correct.
That's right. As a TV show host, she's now back in SA.
A real-life celebrity.
Absolutely. And on the line, Boitabi So, who is in Beijing, China. She's in marketing and communications at YCIS Beijing, which is an international British school there. She initially moved to China to work as an English teacher by day and was an events organizer and blogger after hours. But she's originally from Frankfurt in the Free State. How's that? So, yeah, some love for the Free State. Nothing wrong with that.
Hey, a lot of it's not by stutter rhyme.
Yeah,
not by stutter rhyme. Hey, Frankfurt.
All right, well, Boitabi, so you're on the line. So let me ask you first of all, what is the lifestyle like since you're in China still? Karaoke, nightlife, Chinese people, foreigners. What goes on over there?
There's a lot that goes on here. I always say to people that when you move here, don't ever think that you'll have nothing to do. There's always something constantly happening. You know, people, I think whenever, in terms of the nightlife especially, people think there's nothing like that. They think, what, in China, nightlife, what's that? But there's a variety of things. There are a lot of art spaces, a lot of restaurants. That's one of the things that we all enjoy doing here. There's a lot of eating that goes on. There's a huge culture of eating out. I don't remember the last time I cooked because it's that easy and so easily accessible as well. But there's quite a lot. And also because of such a huge expat community, you also find that people from different communities are constantly organizing different events. So we also find an opportunity, we have an opportunity to learn a lot about other cultures through whether it's workshops, whether it's personal development things, or just partying.
Just
hanging out. There's a lot going on.
Nothing wrong with that. All right. Well, we did discuss in our tourism and travel episode not so long ago, and any of you feel free to jump in. Asi and Tapiso, please, you know, we want to hear your thoughts as well. I've prioritized Boitabi So because she's on the line, and you know how that sometimes goes down.
And she's busy. She's off to a meeting.
Yeah, she's off to a meeting. She's got stuff to do. So let's just talk for a moment about the food, because we did touch on this during the travel.
Is that a taxi hooting in the background?
There was a taxi, right?
Their taxis are hooting.
She's in a DD.
They hoot.
DD life.
DD life.
So Joburg.
Tell me about the food, because it's very different to the food you'd have in South Africa, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So one of the things when I came here, I was briefly vegetarian when I was in South Africa. But when I made the decision to come to China, I threw that out the window because I really wanted to experiment with food. And considering how huge China is, I knew that I had to just throw myself in there. There's a lot of good food. And I think also if you go vegetarian, there are so many options. In particular, I enjoy food from Yunnan. I know a lot of people enjoy Yunnanese food. And I always say when you come to China, I think that's the best way to enter into the Chinese food space if you're a bit nervous about trying out different things. But I love Yunnanese food. I love noodles. Their noodles are so good. Honestly, I could eat noodles every single day. That's something I really enjoy.
Asti's busy shaking her head here in agreement. So
No, she agrees.
So what is it about Yunnanese food? I mean, I don't know the differences here. So give us some intel so we can sound smart when we talk to people.
Well, I guess the biggest reason why I'm agreeing with her is just because there's so many options. Every province in China offers you an absolutely unique experience in terms of food. I was never a foodie. I'm not big on food at all. But when I got to China, I was like, I don't eat rice. I don't eat noodles. I'm a bit worried. I got there and I was like, man, why was I even worried? There is so much food, so much variety. In Beijing, you've got the Peking duck, which is the Beijing duck, which is absolutely divine. I don't know how they make that thing. I should have learned how to do it, but maybe in the future. And then there's provinces that are actually just popular for certain types of food. So, for example, Sichuan food, which is very spicy. And then if you move more southeast or just towards the east, the food tends to be a bit sweeter. And there's provinces where, people eat lamb. So in Inner Mongolia, people are always having lamb. So I've actually experienced a spit braai, but it's manual. Literally with my hands, rolling that sheep over and over. And we first slaughtered the thing. I was like, well, luckily I'm a village girl, so I'm not scared. The other guy that was with me was dying. He's like, oh my goodness, they're going to kill it in front of me. But it was an amazing experience, really.
Yeah, so you almost were in the Free State, but far away.
Kinda. Yeah.
Slaughtering sheep.
No.
Open fire. My goodness.
So, you lived in China for a long time, and you were responsible there for, obviously, brand South Africa. That's a big deal. But what kinds of culture shock things do South Africans not expect when they get to China? And what sort of things shocked you when you arrived? And I don't mean shock in a horrible way. I mean, like, what was surprising?
Like how?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the first thing that hits you when you arrive is just the sheer scale of everything. You know, you leave from Johannesburg and you think you can handle anything. You know, you've traveled around the world, you've seen a few places, then you land slap bang in the middle of Beijing and everything is just humongous. Millions and millions of people, skyscrapers everywhere, brand new skyscrapers that come. You leave Beijing for a month, you come back, there's half a skyscraper that's already come up. So it's really, it can be quite daunting. Walking around the streets of Beijing, with people staring at you, you know, with a lot of interest. Obviously, there aren't as many, black people, African people walking around. So
whenever people stare at you.
With interest, yes.
What does that even mean, with interest? It's obviously not a side eye, but I like.
No, it's not a side eye. It's a friendly curiosity. They'd like to learn about you. They're interested in where you come from. I've been touched before in the subway.
<That's so wrong>.
But not in a bad way.
Thing. That is my worst thing about being in a place where people are not used to seeing black people off TV.
Mm.
Is that people like touch.
Absolutely. So I feel like obviously there's, as he's saying, it's curiosity. Some people have never seen a black person. So I think in the beginning it's a bit shocking.
Yeah.
But actually, once you learn to embrace it, it's beautiful. Because I'm always like, you touch me, I touch you. And we can have a very interesting conversation after that. Some of my friends saw, like, my palm. She was like, but Asi, you're a bit white on the other side. But I'm like, well, not really. It's just my palm that looks like this. So we can share stories. Yeah.
And it's so honest. It's
absolutely.
You know, it doesn't come from a bad place.
You absolutely understand where they're coming from. And through your interactions. And I think that's very important for South Africans who do go to China. Be open. Hear what they have to say. Share what you have to say.
And by Chubby, so let's not forget that China itself is a very diverse country. I mean, there are people who look very different in the north, south, east, and west, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that people constantly get wrong. Yes, it is to a certain extent a very homogenous country, but they're also very different in as much as we have different cultural practices, they have the same. And also, one of the things that I've noticed is how similar we also are. And it just goes back to that, people just giving themselves an opportunity to engage and really approach this experience with an open mind and an interest to learn as well. Right, there's lots of sheep, and we do the same.
We do the same, absolutely.
But okay, yeah, so but navigating,
there's so many similarities.
So, but arriving and then navigating your way around,
mm-hmm, yeah,
freaks me out to think that. So signs are not like written
actually
in English, are they?
Well, if you're in Beijing, which is a big city, you can literally get around with so much ease. So I actually wrote something about how to get around if you don't speak Mandarin. If you have an address, you copy the Chinese address. You can show the taxi driver, this is where I'm going. If you show him in English, you can't read
that. Where do you copy the Chinese address from where?
Most of the websites will give you the location with the English name as well as the Chinese name.
Or else you screen munch.
Absolutely.
Screen munch as you go along.
Yeah.
That's my thing, though, because we're used to seeing characters in a particular way.
Pictures.
Right. And then when you're there, they're used to seeing characters in a completely different way. So how is that for you, kind of arriving, and then you can't even see that sign says exit?
Well, it's part of the experience. But eventually, you do start to recognize some of the more common symbols. You know, you start to recognize Beijing.
Okay.
You know, and some other characters that you know that feature in your life. So you may not know precisely, you know, how to write it or how to draw it, but you recognize it when you see it.
So, Boitabi, so how good are you at that?
What recognizing characters and things?
Yeah.
I think Estee's are way better than I am. I'm a bit terrible at it. It's embarrassing. I'm ashamed of myself. I know, but I have to mention as well how, honestly, I've met Chinese people who are also very extremely helpful. Many of them are willing to help you out. I've made such good friends who are always ready to help me out with my deliveries and things like that. So sometimes I know people say, no, it's so difficult if you don't speak the language. How will you maneuver the city? But you do have people who are really open to helping you out and help you just figure your way out around the city. But also, I am learning Chinese still.
Yay.
I have class later. So I'm trying, guys.
But what in the world makes a girl from Frankfurt decide I'm going to China? Like, what happened there? How did you make that decision? And then how did you tell your parents that I am going to China?
Yo, okay, yeah, that was a rough conversation with one of my parents. But I was just, I've always wanted to travel. I unfortunately did not have the opportunity to do it growing up, but I knew that this was something I wanted to do once I finished school. So when I had started working and 9 to 5, I figured it was time to just make.
Okay,
Boitabi, so we're going to let you go because I know that you're about to catch a cab and go to a meeting in Beijing anyway. So she's busy. I see you have an answer already for this question. How do you decide to go to China out of all places? And what do you say to your parents?
It came at a time when I was looking to further my studies, and somebody told me there is an opportunity, there's a scholarship available, and I thought, well, I could either work and study at the same time or completely just be a student, immerse myself in a new culture, learn a new language, and that for me was amazing. So I called my mom, I said, Mama, I'm applying for a scholarship, what do you think? She was like, fantastic, I'll pray for you, I hope you get it. And I applied and I got it, and that was the beginning of some of the best 3 years of my life, really.
And you
best
can
3 years of your life.
Literally.
It's amazing. Are you missing it now because you're back?
Quite a lot. So I've been making Chinese food for all my friends every night. I think they're getting sick of it. I taught my family how to eat with chopsticks, and they were like, "Yo, where is the fork?" They didn't enjoy it too much. But we had a good time.
And according to Boitabiso, you can speak quite well in Mandarin. You can write some too.
对啊，我会说中文.
Wow. Sounds professional enough.
I said, yes, I can speak Chinese.
Damn.
I got you. Yeah.
All
right.
We're just nodding and smiling. Do you see that? We're just nodding and smiling.
Okay, so how, what do we teach Chinese people when we're in China about South African culture?
Yeah, I think that's an important point here, because in my work with Brand South Africa, we needed to build relations and build bridges between the two countries, between the two peoples, so that we could position ourselves as a country to be able to do more business and to attract more investment from China. And what worked very well was actually building those human relationships. And in our case, as you mentioned in the beginning of the show, there are thousands and thousands of South Africans who are currently either traveling or living or working right across China.
Yeah.
And the way we've responded to it as Brand South Africa is to have a program called the Global South Africans Program that actually builds a network of these South Africans all around the world, not just in China, and actually equip them, empower them, and encourage them to promote South African culture within the country wherever they're living, with their friends, the people, their neighbors, at the schools where they're teaching. And likewise,
it's like
Chinese.
A network, right?
Essentially, it's a network.
Because you three know each other. I mean, you've all actually met.
And what's that look?
Yeah. So,
what's that look?
So, funny enough, we were actually having a quick discussion about it earlier on. As humongous as Beijing is, I actually met Asi in Beijing. I met Boitabiso in Beijing. So, I know both ladies.
Do you all go to the same karaoke bars?
Not at all.
Not at all.
Is there like a karaoke bar for the South Africans?
I had actually never even been to a karaoke bar.
No, but you need, to, you need to change that.
So what happened was, I mean, Boitabiso is gone now, but she is very active in coordinating activities and bringing South Africans together. So that we can, you know, you can network, you can have some kind of support structure and party, as she said.
It's amazing.
Because in the beginning, you do need that support. As I arrived in Beijing all by myself with my suitcase and my laptop, and I needed to figure things out. And fortunately, within 2 days of arriving there, I was introduced to Boitabiso on WeChat. I hadn't met her yet.
That's right.
And she was hosting a party that Saturday, and I attended the party.
Wow.
And I met probably 30 or 40
you went
South
to the
Africans.
Party.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yo, I need to know about this karaoke bar thing, because it's one of my favorite things, right? Karaoke. And, like, top of the list. Every time you see it. Come on, Gareth, don't laugh like that. You've seen it in all the movies.
It's next level, like, in China. Literally, right? I had, for my birthday as well, we had dinner and then karaoke and then we go out. Because
even the going out, it's the pregame.
Yeah. And it's a room, they'll bring you popcorn, and it's like always like these golden rooms with these fancy couches, there's screens everywhere, amazing microphones, and then what's really nice is when the foreigners start singing in Chinese, that's when you're like, yes, we are now living our China life. It's absolutely amazing, really. You feel so proud. I can read these characters, I am singing with these characters.
It's in the characters,
yes.
Oh Lord.
That is phenomenal. All right, now
first of all, the karaoke is the pregame. You're not out yet. You're just warming up for a night
out. That's a warm-up.
So that's quite cool. Quite cool. And I'm very disappointed in you, Tepiso, that all those years, you never went to a karaoke bar.
So where did you go? I mean, like, besides
too much work. Heban.
Oh, come on.
Heban.
Chinese people work hard too. They also need to relax.
They play hard at the pregame karaoke party.
True. So what kinds of things did you do in your spare time?
So in my spare time, I explored. I walked around a lot. I tried to find new spots to sit and read at, people watch, a little bit of traveling in between whenever I could.
Right.
So I went to, you know, took the train out to Tianjin for a weekend. I was in Hong Kong once in a while. So I tried to explore and just to make as much contact, outside contact as possible, so that I could get a good perspective of China. And you get that through interactions with people in the streets, in the shops, in restaurants.
Okay, people watching is a good one. People watching is a good one, because it's what you do when you're like out in strange places. So as you were people watching,
yeah,
what did you see that you were kind of like, hey?
So what I saw was a vibrant a vibrant China. I saw a youth that was very energetic. They were in touch with the latest trends on top of fashion. So here's the other thing that people don't understand or don't know about Beijing. Beijing is ultra fashionable. And you see things that you have not seen here. We are very conservative as South Africans when it comes to fashion.
Really?
If we think we're fashion forward, we haven't seen anything yet. So you go to Beijing, there are all sorts of styles, all sorts of combinations, hairstyles. People are really adventurous when it comes to fashion. So
did you feel a bit boring by comparison? I mean, or did you very quickly acclimatize and start getting
so
a little
bit... So did you become those people? Were you like out there in the... You were a celebrity, surely you did.
So, you know what? Online shopping is a big thing in China. And before I could even speak Mandarin, I was shopping online. They told me, Asi, there's Taobao, there's JD, you need to shop. I said, okay, I can't read a thing, but I can see pictures. I got shopping. And what I used to do is, because then the delivery man comes downstairs and he's trying to tell me stuff, and I don't know what he's saying. I'm like, wei, ni hao. And I'm like, he's like, blah, blah, blah. I learned one sentence to say, I'm coming down. And I'm like, well, shall I? And I would run downstairs and hope he's there. And sometimes he wasn't there. He was telling me I'm coming tomorrow. But I learned. Or I would just give my phone to people next to me. Listen to this guy. Tell me what he's saying. Where are my clothes? It's crazy.
I need to find out about the scholarship.
Yeah, it sounds like
you're like, what? The scholarship was great. You could shop.
Oh, no, but things are quite affordable.
And
so
how much did you bring back? You must have come with suitcase after suitcase.
Stressful amounts.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. You accumulate a lot of clothes. But part of the reason is because of the seasons. I mean, winter here is nothing compared to winter in Beijing. So none of your winter clothes here are going to help when you get to Beijing. Absolutely. You need to buy everything right from the vest.
Did you know that before you got there, or was it a surprise?
I knew Beijing was cold, but once you're out there and the wind is blowing and you feel like death and you're walking the street, you don't have a car, remember? We're so spoiled here. We're used to driving, get into the car, you switch on the heater, you park in the basement and you enter the building. You don't even feel winter, even if it's really cold here. In Beijing, you're on the road, you're in the streets, you're catching cabs, you're in the subway. So you are exposed to the elements. And so you need to have the right kind of clothes.
What are the things, if you're a South African going to China, perhaps to live? Maybe you're going there to spend a lot of time like you did, Asi. What are the things that you should know before you go? Like, what should you take? Mm-hmm. What kinds of ideas should you have? What should you prepare, you know?
Okay, well, I guess this is now for the girls. If you are going up there and you are a brown-skinned girl, take some brown-skinned girl foundation, because that's not very easy to find. And then if you're going to miss, like, eating South African food with South African spices, because there will be fried chicken, but it's going to be the Chinese version. So maybe pack some spices. So these are all the things that I packed, because my friends who were there before me, they told me, they're like, Asi, you need to pack foundation. You need to pack stockings in your skin tone, because you might not be able to find that very easily. But besides that, I think mentally, just don't go there and eat McDonald's. Don't go there and eat KFC.
Yeah. Yeah.
Experience China, because that's what you're there for. Always think, can I do this at home? Because you are going to come back home. If you can do it at home, maybe do something else, because you're missing out and there's so much going on. As Boito was saying, there's an event every weekend. There's people to meet. Obviously, you have to balance, especially if you're a student like myself. You need to have fun, but you got to attend your classes. You got to, you know, follow how Chinese people do things, because you're a visitor. You're not Chinese.
So my most important question about Beijing and living in Beijing is, are there really 10,000 bicycles in Beijing?
9 million is more. There's more, way more, because now you must remember there was the...
It's like 10 million or something.
Yeah, there was the rented bicycle, so the boom just came, and there were so many companies that are in the industry right now. So there's the bicycles that people own, and there's the bicycles that you can rent. So it's very exciting. Every day.
Yeah. So it won't be the bicycles that many people have in mind. This is bicycle 2.0. So remember, we moved on from the bicycles that we saw in the pictures in the 80s and 90s.
The song.
As Beijing grew, there was a lot of the motor industry has grown. There are millions of cars on the road. The latest cars. So that's another misconception that some people may have. You will see the latest and the most personalized version of you know, the most expensive brands of sports cars, luxury cars. But at the same time, the bicycle has also continued to grow. And this is, you know, as a way of moving around the city. So people will, you know, will use the bike sharing app. You pick up, you get out of the subway, you pick up a bike, and you ride a few blocks to your meeting, and you drop it off there. And then in the afternoon, you pick up another bike elsewhere, and eventually you get back into your car and you drive out of town.
Absolutely.
Wow. And what how is your life like? What is different about living in China? Do people mostly live in apartments? I mean, you guys were in Beijing, right? So yeah. I would imagine in a city, and really even Joburg CBD is not like that, because it's very much more kind of new, a lot of Beijing, right? A lot of the apartment buildings might even just be 5 to 6 years old, let alone, you know, the 100-year-old ones we've got here in Joburg. Plus, they have state-of-the-art kind of fixtures and fittings and technology in them. But is the space small? How do people live? What do you have in your apartment? What kinds of things are different to the way you would live here?
Yes, so I went for the soft landing. I lived in the CBD of Beijing, where there were quite a number of expats in the building. It made things a little bit easier to adjust to. You know, you can ask around. You know, there are people who've been living there a year or two longer than you, so they can help you out. If you need help with the cab downstairs, right, or if you get a call from the delivery guy, you literally just hand over the phone. And that's the one interesting thing that I remember. Wherever you go, you need to basically look out for the security guards or the guys at the door, because they are your best friend. You know,
yeah, they'll help you figure it all out.
When your cab is getting lost and they're trying to find out which side of the building you're on, before they cancel on you, you need to hand your phone over to whoever's standing at the door so that they can explain. So that's where I live. The space is not too bad. That's in Beijing. However, I did have some experience traveling to Hong Kong frequently for work. And there, you know, when I visited friends, their apartments are really, really tiny. And you pay a premium for space.
What do you mean really, really tiny? Like you walk in and bump into the bed?
Yes, it can happen. I've got a friend who's paying a lot of money for a 40 square meter two bedroom apartment.
Two bedrooms in 40 square meters.
And she's bawling. Yes. That's a good property.
Do you sleep upright in 40 square meters of apartment? Sure.
Two bedrooms in 40 square meters.
Two bar stools.
How big's the bed?
That's it. So, and it gets worse. She's in an okay apartment.
Wow.
But that's Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. In Beijing, you get a lot more space.
Okay.
Well, I lived a student life, so different situation.
So what kind of place
you prioritized shopping?
I was actually... I lived on campus.
Uh-huh.
I lived on campus, and I was very impressed by my room. It was massive, honestly. And I shared it with another person, but we had plenty of space. I moved to a new university after that, and the room was a lot smaller. But still, I mean, as a student, you just need a desk and a bed, not much more. And you don't cook. I never cooked in China, so don't need a kitchen or anything. You order food online, and they bring it downstairs. So
And is it expensive to live there?
Beijing more than other cities. I mean, Beijing is a first-tier city. So when you move to second-tier, third-tier, then things might be a lot cheaper. But I think you can find affordable ways of living in Beijing.
What does that even mean, first-tier, second-tier? Like, is Joburg first-tier and Durban second-tier?
Something like that. So just in terms of the development as an economy, the size of, you know, the city
That's
itself.
Right.
Beijing is up there. So you can, as Asi says, you know, you can, if you explore, you can find affordable solutions. You can find affordable food. So if you eat local food,
Solutions. I love that. Like you can find affordable solutions.
The thing is, people default to what they know and what they're accustomed to. So you'll end up eating at expensive restaurants. You know, Italian restaurants, German pubs, and so on, which will cost you probably double what you'll pay if
you go to a local restaurant. Yeah, and once you crack the code, then
precisely. You can find affordable food, but as you move out to the smaller cities, the prices do become more affordable. The taxis are slightly cheaper. The apartments are way cheaper. So, yeah, so it all depends on which city you are living in.
That's terrific.
Yeah, it's so awesome. So we were talking to Thea about ways to make himself more interesting to Wendy Williams, right? And I'm wondering what it is when you were there. What is it that they find fascinating and interesting about us?
Yeah, are they even interested in South Africa there? Because, I mean, a lot of South Africans probably don't know a lot about China. Most South Africans wouldn't, unless they've been there, or unless they've heard a podcast series like this, or they've picked up a couple of books. You know, most South Africans, it's another world.
Absolutely. There definitely is a lot of interest in South Africa. And as people become more and more exposed, they definitely are very responsive. So, you know, people ask, as you tell them where you're from, and you'll tell them Nanfei, and then, you know, they'll tell you, oh, you know, safaris, Nanfei, diamonds.
South Africa in Chinese.
Nanfei is South Africa in Chinese. So there is definitely a lot of interest. There's been a lot of activity in terms of the political relationship between the two countries. I mean, last year we celebrated 20 years of diplomatic relations between China and South Africa, and there was a lot of activity that people were exposed to. And from a tourism perspective, there's a lot of interest in visiting South Africa, especially Cape Town. Cape Town is very popular amongst the Chinese tourists. And even from a business perspective, there's also interest in that a lot of people have not been fully exposed to exactly what South Africa is, what South Africa looks like. And so as they see us and as they interact with us and as they see pictures of our homes, of our families, of the places where we come from, some people are surprised. They say, oh, actually, is that what it looks like? Because what most people are exposed to local, in China is an aggregated view of Africa. So you may see, you know, the safari, sure. You may see a bit
but
of Kenya.
But that happens with
you
Europeans see, and Americans too.
Correct. So know. Whereas when you zoom in on South Africa and you suddenly you see Cape Town, you see the Joburg CBD, you see Sandton, you see the malls and the brands that people can shop for here, when you see the cars and you see the people and you see the clothes that we wear, there's, you know, people are very interested in seeing.
What about dating?
Dating?
I'll leave that one to Asi.
Why?
Watch him. So dating in Beijing, I guess, is very interesting just because of the nature of who's coming to Beijing. A lot of people aren't there to stay. They're there for maybe 1 year, 2 years. So you start dating someone, and then after 6 months, they're like, yeah, I'm going back to Italy. Oh, I'm from Romania. And then it's like, are we going to stay together, or are we going to go our separate ways? You see, that's what you're saying. So that's maybe what is a great challenge for a lot of people, because nobody's there to stay, really. So it's quite a big commitment to make at a very early stage of your relationship. But otherwise, it's like, I think it's like the rest of the world. People use dating apps.
Is there Tinder?
There's Tinder, but there's also Tantan, which is the Chinese Tinder.
Okay.
So Tinder is used by the foreigners a lot, and then most of the Chinese people use the Tantan. But, you know, people can use either one. But if you're going to go into Tantan, then maybe
you're looking for.
Your Chinese, yeah, should be...
Good.
Yeah, exactly.
So what do you put on your Tantan profile that would make you like...
Well, in your case, for me, just a picture would be a good start.
What I would paid you, him for that.
Before she gets excited about like dating in Beijing, what would you, if you did go back now, what would be the first place you'd visit? And if I went with you, what would you show me first?
This is Beijing we're talking about.
Yeah, well, let's stay in Beijing, but anywhere in China.
Yeah, I'd say...
In Beijing, I would probably take you first to the Hutongs, which is the olden day style Chinese buildings, and it's very special because they've become almost like a touristic destination, but it's actually people's homes.
Wow.
And it's a very, you know, Beijing is a bustling city, but when you go to the Hutongs, you find maybe three men wearing a Beijing bikini, which is when they lift their vest to here, and they're just playing chess together, well, Chinese chess, and you'll find just ladies sitting around doing whatever they're doing. Like, it's a very authentic experience, and it's in the middle of a big city. So it's very special. So definitely somewhere I'd take you. And there's also a whole lot of street food there. So you experience
You can even buy boiled mealies on the side of the road, roasted sweet potato, kind of like home.
Dude, I told y'all they like us. Mm.
Yeah. Totally.
Roasted, is it roasted in the, like, mbaula? No.
There's just mbaula.
It's a mbaula, guys.
Wow. Pumi, yes. You'd be right at home. I think we've got to organize you a trip ASAP.
They're slaughtering sheep. There's a mbaula with, like, sweet corn.
This is home away from home for you.
I could do this.
Well, I've got to say, it's really good to hear the first-hand experiences. And a big thank you to Boitabiso Mokwena, who was on the line with us from Beijing. And Asi, it's a pleasure to see you. It's a pleasure to see you, Tsepiso. And thank you for sharing your stories with us. This is spectacular. Yeah.
Thank you for having pleasure. Us.
Very, very cool.
Thank you very much.
Well, this is How's It China Episode 4. Don't forget you can join us for another episode of this next week. We'll be talking about even more exciting and interesting things, stuff that you probably might not know about China. And we know lots of people have only joined in now. So if you've missed out on the first three episodes, you can download those podcasts on cliffcentral.com.
This is How's It China with Cliff Central and China Plus. Download the podcast on the Cliff Central website, app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.